Chapter 5. Pedestrians, mere sporting characters, and who were actually engaged in the cold-blooded and barbarous occupation of dueling, a pursuit from which humanity recoiled with horror and disgust. He suggested that measures should be immediately taken to employ the labor of these fleas as part and parcel of the productive power of the country, which might easily be done by the establishment among them of infant schools and houses of industry, in which a system of virtuous education, based upon sound principles, should be observed, and moral precepts strictly inculcated. He proposed that every flea who presumed to exhibit, for hire, music, or dancing, or any species of theatrical entertainment, without a license, should be considered a vagabond, and treated accordingly, in which respect he only placed him upon a level with the rest of mankind. He would further suggest that their labor should be placed under the control and regulation of the state, who should set apart from the profits a fund for the support of superannuated or disabled fleas, their widows and orphans. With this view, he proposed that liberal premiums should be offered for the three best designs for a general almshouse, from which, as insect architecture was well known to be in a very advanced and perfect state, we might possibly derive many valuable hints for the improvement of our metropolitan universities, national galleries, and other public edifices. The president wished to be informed how the ingenious gentleman proposed to open a communication with fleas generally, in the first instance, so that they might be thoroughly imbued with a sense of the advantages they must necessarily derive from changing their mode of life, and applying themselves to honest labor. This appeared to him the only difficulty. The author submitted that this difficulty was easily overcome, or rather that there was no difficulty at all in the case. Obviously, the course to be pursued, if Her Majesty's government could be prevailed upon to take up the plan, would be to secure the remunerative salary the individual to whom he had alluded as presiding over the exhibition in Regent Street at the period of his visit. That gentleman would at once be able to put himself in communication with the mass of the fleas, and to instruct them in pursuance of some general plan of education, to be sanctioned by Parliament, until such time as the more intelligent among them were advanced enough to officiate as teachers to the rest. The president and several members of the section highly complimented the author of the paper last read on his most ingenious and important treatise. It was determined that the subject should be recommended to the immediate consideration of the council. Mr. Wigsby produced a cauliflower somewhat larger than a chaise umbrella, which had been raised by no other artificial means than the simple application of highly carbonated soda water as manure. He explained that by scooping out the head, which would afford a new and delicious species of nourishment for the poor, a parachute, in principle something similar to that constructed by M. Garnerin, was at once obtained, the stock of course being kept downwards. He added that he was perfectly willing to make a descent from a height of not less than 3 miles and a quarter, and had in fact already proposed the same to the proprietors of Vauxhall Gardens, who in the handsomest manner at once consented to his wishes, and appointed an early day next summer for the undertaking, merely stipulating that the rim of the cauliflower should be previously broken in 3 or 4 places, to ensure the safety of the descent. The president congratulated the public on the grand gala in store for them, and warmly eulogized the proprietors of the establishment alluded to, for their love of science, and regard for the safety of human life, both of which did them the highest honor. A member wished to know how many thousand additional lamps the royal property would be illuminated with on the night after the descent. Mr. Wigsby replied that the point was not yet finally decided, but he believed it was proposed, over and above the ordinary illuminations, to exhibit in various devices 8,500,000 of additional lamps. The member expressed himself much gratified with this announcement. Mr. Blunderum delighted the section with a most interesting and valuable paper on the last moments of the learned pig, which produced a very strong impression on the assembly, the account being compiled from the personal recollections of his favorite attendant. The account stated in the most emphatic terms that the animal's name was not Toby, but Solomon, and distinctly proved that he could have no near relatives in the profession, as many designing persons had falsely stated, inasmuch as his father, mother, brothers and sisters had all fallen victims to the butcher at different times. An uncle of his, indeed, had with very great labor been traced to a sty in Somers Town, but as he was in a very infirm state at the time, being afflicted with measles, and shortly afterwards disappeared, there appeared too much reason to conjecture that he had been converted into sausages. The disorder of the learned pig was originally a severe cold, which, being aggravated by excessive trough indulgence, finally settled upon the lungs, and terminated in a general decay of the constitution. A melancholy instance of a presentiment entertained by the animal of his approaching dissolution was recorded. After gratifying a numerous and fashionable company with his performances, in which no falling off whatever was visible, he fixed his eyes on the biographer, and, turning to the watch which lay on the floor, and on which he was accustomed to point out the hour, deliberately passed his snout twice round the dial. In precisely 4:20 from that time he had ceased to exist. Professor Wheezy inquired whether, previous to his demise, the animal had expressed, by signs or otherwise, any wishes regarding the disposal of his little property. Mr. Blunderum replied that, when the biographer took up the pack of cards at the conclusion of the performance, the animal grunted several times in a significant manner, and nodding his head as he was accustomed to do when gratified. From these gestures it was understood that he wished the attendant to keep the cards, which he had ever since done. He had not expressed any wish relative to his watch, which had accordingly been pawned by the same individual. The president wished to know whether any member of the section had ever seen or conversed with the pig-faced lady, who was reported to have worn a black velvet mask, and to have taken her meals from a golden trough. After some hesitation, a member replied that the pig-faced lady was his mother-in-law, and that he trusted the president would not violate the sanctity of private life. The president begged pardon. He had considered the pig-faced lady a public character. Would the honorable member object to state, with a view to the advancement of science, whether she was in any way connected with the learned pig? The member replied in the same low tone that, as the question appeared to involve a suspicion that the learned pig might be his half-brother, he must decline answering it. Section B. Anatomy and Medicine. Coach House, Pig and Tinder Box. President, Dr. Tourell. Vice Presidents, Professors Muff and Nogo. Dr. Kutankumagin of Moscow read to the section a report of a case which had occurred within his own practice, strikingly illustrative of the power of medicine, as exemplified in his successful treatment of a virulent disorder. He had been called in to visit the patient on the 1st of April, 1837. He was then laboring under symptoms peculiarly alarming to any medical man. His frame was stout and muscular, his step firm and elastic, his cheeks plump and red, his voice loud, his appetite good, his pulse full and round. He was in the constant habit of eating 3 meals per diem, and of drinking at least 1 bottle of wine, and 1 glass of spirituous liquors diluted with water, in the course of the 4:20. He laughed constantly, and in so hearty a manner, that it was terrible to hear him. By dint of powerful medicine, low diet, and bleeding, the symptoms in the course of 3 days perceptibly decreased. A rigid perseverance in the same course of treatment for only 1 week, accompanied with small doses of water gruel, weak broth, and barley water, led to their entire disappearance. In the course of a month he was sufficiently recovered to be carried downstairs by two nurses, and to enjoy an airing in a close carriage, supported by soft pillows. At the present moment he was restored so far as to walk about, with the slight assistance of a crutch and a boy. It would perhaps be gratifying to the section to learn that he ate little, drank little, slept little, and was never heard to laugh by any accident whatever. Dr. W. Arfi, in complimenting the honorable member upon the triumphant cure he had effected, begged to ask whether the patient still bled freely? Dr. Kutankumagen replied in the affirmative. Dr. W. Arfi, and you found that he bled freely during the whole course of the disorder? Dr. Kutankumagen. Oh dear, yes, most freely. Dr. Nishit supposed that if the patient had not submitted to be bled with great readiness and perseverance, so extraordinary a cure could never, in fact, have been accomplished. Dr. Kutankumagen rejoined, certainly not. Mr. Knightbell M. R. C. S. exhibited a wax preparation of the interior of a gentleman who in early life had inadvertently swallowed a door key. It was a curious fact that a medical student of dissipated habits, being present at the post-mortem examination, found means to escape unobserved from the room, with that portion of the coats of the stomach upon which an exact model of the instrument was distinctly impressed, with which he hastened to a locksmith of doubtful character, who made a new key from the pattern so shown to him. With this key the medical student entered the house of the deceased gentleman, and committed a burglary to a large amount, for which he was subsequently tried and executed. The president wished to know what became of the original key after the lapse of years. Mr. Knightbell replied that the gentleman was always much accustomed to punch, and it was supposed the acid had gradually devoured it. Dr. Nishitz and several of the members were of opinion that the key must have lain very cold and heavy upon the gentleman's stomach. Mr. Knightbell believed it did at first. It was worthy of remark, perhaps, that for some years the gentleman was troubled with a nightmare, under the influence of which he always imagined himself a wine cellar door. Professor Muff related a very extraordinary and convincing proof of the wonderful efficacy of the system of infinitesimal doses, which the section were doubtless aware was based upon the theory that the very minutest amount of any given drug, properly dispersed through the human frame, would be productive of precisely the same result as a very large dose administered in the usual manner. Thus, the 40th part of a grain of calomel was supposed to be equal to a 5-grain calomel pill, and so on in proportion throughout the whole range of medicine. He had tried the experiment in a curious manner upon a publican who had been brought into the hospital with a broken head, and was cured upon the infinitesimal system in the incredibly short space of 3 months. This man was a hard drinker. He, Professor Muff, had dispersed 3 drops of rum through a bucket of water, and requested the man to drink the whole. What was the result? Before he had drunk a quart, he was in a state of beastly intoxication, and 5 other men were made dead drunk with the remainder. The president wished to know whether an infinitesimal dose of soda water would have recovered them. Professor Muff replied that the 25th part of a teaspoonful, properly administered to each patient, would have sobered him immediately. The president remarked that this was a most important discovery, and he hoped the Lord Mayor and Court of Aldermen would patronize it immediately. A member begged to be informed whether it would be possible to administer, say, the 20th part of a grain of bread and cheese to all grown-up paupers, and the 40th part to children, with the same satisfying effect as their present allowance. Professor Muff was willing to stake his professional reputation on the perfect adequacy of such a quantity of food to the support of human life in workhouses. The addition of the 15th part of a grain of pudding twice a week would render it a high diet. Professor Nogo called the attention of the section to a very extraordinary case of animal magnetism. A private watchman, being merely looked at by the operator from the opposite side of a wide street, was at once observed to be in a very drowsy and languid state. He was followed to his box, and being once slightly rubbed on the palms of the hands, fell into a sound sleep, in which he continued without intermission for 10 hours. Section C Statistics. Hay Loft, Original Pig. President Mr. Woodensconce. Vice Presidents Mr. Ledbrain and Mr. Timbered. Mr. Slug stated to the section the result of some calculations he had made with great difficulty and labor, regarding the state of infant education among the middle classes of London. He found that, within a circle of 3 miles from the Elephant and Castle, the following were the names and numbers of children's books principally in circulation. Jack the Giant Killer 7943 ditto and Beanstalk 8621 ditto, and 11 Brothers 2845 ditto and Jill 1998 total 21,407, he found that the proportion of Robinson Crusoe's to Philip Quarles was as 4.5 to 1, and that the preponderance of Valentine and Orson's over Goody Two Shoes's was as 3.8 of the former, 2.5 to 1 of the latter. A comparison of 7 champions with Simple Simons gave the same result. The ignorance that prevailed was lamentable. One child, on being asked whether he would rather be St. George of England or a respectable tallow chandler, instantly replied, "Taint George of England." Another, a little boy of 8 years old, was found to be firmly impressed with a belief in the existence of dragons, and openly stated that it was his intention when he grew up to rush forth sword in hand for the deliverance of captive princesses and the promiscuous slaughter of giants. Not one child among the number interrogated had ever heard of Mungo Park, some inquiring whether he was at all connected with the black man that swept the crossing, and others whether he was in any way related to the Regent's Park. They had not the slightest conception of the commonest principles of mathematics, and considered Sinbad the Sailor the most enterprising voyager that the world had ever produced. A member strongly deprecating the use of all the other books mentioned, suggested that Jack and Jill might perhaps be exempted from the general censure, inasmuch as the hero and heroine, in the very outset of the tale, were depicted as going up a hill to fetch. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.